My name's Christine, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi.
I know we just did that, but someone might not have heard. I want everyone to know who I am. I just wanted to let you know that we're really glad to have everyone here from all over the state. And from different states from Canada. It's great to have you here. We're very excited to have everybody. At 5 o'clock, we had 1,600 registered attendees. And the beauty of that is that that means that the message of AA is getting to 1,600 people tonight. And that's what we're here for, is to carry the message of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'd also like to recognize the committee who's put on this convention.
Hi, everybody. My name's Johnny, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Johnny.
I'm glad to be here tonight, and I'm glad to be sober. I'm glad to be in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. I want to thank the, before I get carried away with me, I want to thank the committee for extending the extreme privilege of me participating at an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. It's always been my opinion, and I hope...
Sorry. Trying to help.
It really is my own personal opinion, and I hope it always remains such, that it's some type of a privilege to be allowed and come and sit with you good people. I hope I don't ever get it through my sick head that I have a right to everything that goes on in Alcoholics Anonymous just because I was lucky enough to stumble into a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous and get sober and stay that way. I hope that everything I'm ever asked to do in Alcoholics Anonymous, I consider it some type of an extreme privilege that I really don't deserve. I really have looked back on my life for a long period of time, and I can't see anything that I ever did in my life prior to coming to Alcoholics Anonymous that would even resemble anything good enough for me to live the type of life that I live today because of Alcoholics Anonymous. I hope I always think that way. I hope I never get into that self-righteous little mode action, well, I've been here a while, I deserve this or I deserve that. If I get what I deserve, I hope you're not with me. I'm extremely pleased to be here tonight, fully clothed and in my right mind. And I want to tell you that because a little over 40 years ago, I came to crawling around in a cell in solitary confinement in a maximum security penitentiary, drifting in and out of total insanity. Now, because of a loving God that has expressed himself through this program called Alcoholics Anonymous, it's no longer necessary for me to crawl around on my hands and knees like an animal. And if I don't get nothing else out of this deal, I guess I can live with that for a long time. It makes me feel good. Now, I'd like to tell you, without any reservation whatsoever, that man, that's where alcohol took me to. No, that's where I took me to. The only thing that alcohol ever did in my life, it kept me alive long enough to stumble into a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's all. I'm as sure as I'm standing here, if I hadn't taken a drink of alcohol, I'd have probably blown my brains out before I was 9 years old. See, I've always been a misfit. I never quite seemed to be there. Wherever it was, I just wasn't quite there. I was always restless and irritable and discontent. I was always angry and hostile and a little apart from everything. I didn't realize then, as I've come to understand in Alcoholics Anonymous, that those are the symptoms of the most deadly disease that's ever been known to mankind. Kill more people than all the combined illnesses and diseases that's ever been registered in the world. And this disease that I have has written history that goes back something in the neighborhood of 7,000 years. Now, I didn't know I had that. I didn't understand what was going on, because I knew a lot about whiskey. My people drank whiskey. They made it, and they drank it. And they did what people who make whiskey and drink it do. They gathered up on Saturday night and beat the hell out of one another. But they did. They were Irish people. They didn't have any type of religion to hold their guilt down. They just went at it. Crazy people. They just, ooh, God, they were nuts. But you know, I used to understand, and I've always had an understanding for violence. I always had. I mean, it just kind of seemed like a nice thing to do from time to time. You know, like putting your foot in somebody's belly. It's almost like a spiritual experience sometimes. So I watched them. They beat each other up and stole each other's whiskey and each other's women, and whoever survived was the king for the week, I guess. What I was never able to understand is how these same people who did that to one another would gather up on Wednesdays and put their arms around one another and say things like, "We love one another because we're family." And I took a look at that, and I guess, now I don't remember taking a vow about anything, I guess I must have said to myself, if that's what love is, you can keep it. Because I don't ever remember uttering that word to another human being prior to coming to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous or for a long time after I was here. It just wasn't in my vocabulary. See, I don't really understand whether I was born alcoholic or not, where it came from or not. I don't know whether I caught it somewhere on a toilet seat or what happened to me. It's really never been interesting to me where it came from. My problem always seemed to be, as far back as I could ever possibly remember, was that I needed an answer for something. I needed an answer, but I didn't know what my problem was. Now, it's kind of hard to find an answer to a problem if you don't know what it is. And so I started looking for a way out of this dilemma a long time before I ever got to Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm looking for a way out, because I know whatever it is with me, there's something missing, and I got to find out whatever it is. I looked up one day, saw my grandmother. Now, my grandmother lived till she was 90 years old, and she never took a drink of alcohol or smoked a cigarette in her life. My grandmother wouldn't think it's a big deal that I've been sober over 38 years. Big deal, she'd say. I ain't had a drink for 90. But you can look. I took her. I said, "Yeah, Granny, maybe you should have had a couple from time to time. Might have took the edge off of it." But my grandmother was a fantastic old lady. She was a wonderful lady. And she used to get up on Sunday morning and step over the bodies at her house. And she took off, put her best dress on. She took off, went somewhere. She's gone for a couple hours, and she came back. Something miraculous had happened to her. She's just different. She's a little lighter in her step and a little easier in her being. She kind of danced over the bodies, cleaned them up, cooked for them, patched them up, and sang songs to Jesus. Now, I took a look then, and I filed that in my keen alcoholic mind. Now, if you're new here in Alcoholics Anonymous, I want to caution you that this is the only place in the world you're ever going to hear about the keen alcoholic mind. You ain't never going to an Al-Anon meeting and hear about it, I'll tell you that. They say things like the keen alcoholic got up last night and peed in the linen closet. You ask us, we'll tell you about anything. We may not know anything about it, but we'll say something to you about it. If we ain't got any answer, we'll just nod and say, "Uh-huh, that's true, yeah." I sit around watching, you know, Christine talking about people watching. I was watching people, and there were 7 conversations going on at every table. Everybody's talking, nobody's listening. Yeah. And every once in a while, somebody's sitting there trying to get a word in, every now and then. But I took a look at my grandmother, but you see, the dilemma in my house was my grandfather. My grandfather was entirely different. Grandpa took off when he had money, and he came back when he didn't have money. And where he went, God only knows. They'd bring him back in various shapes and forms. One time they brought him back in a wagon. He'd been shot and stabbed and thrown off the second floor balcony of a whorehouse in Kansas City. Now I took a look at that, and I figured Grandma's got the best deal. You don't have to be a rocket scientist to figure that out. But you see, and then I made another mistake because I didn't know any better. I thought that all I would have to do is go where my grandmother goes, do what my grandmother does, and I'd be like my grandmother. I'm not like my grandmother, because my grandmother's not alcoholic. I did not know then, as I've come to understand here, that I am bodily and mentally different from my grandmother. I didn't know that. And so I got up one Sunday a long, long time ago, and put my hand in my grandmother's hand and went off to my grandmother's church with my grandmother and sit there and waited for this thing to happen to me. And it didn't. And I don't know whether I was discouraged or anything about it. It just didn't happen to me. And I went off and left. And it took me a long time in Alcoholics Anonymous to understand something very clear, that there was nothing in the world wrong with my grandmother's church. There's something wrong with the jackass sitting in it, but nothing wrong with my grandmother. See, what I was doing in that church is what I've been doing all my life from my earliest recollection of life. I'm looking for something out here to make me feel better in here. And I never once ever dawned on me for a long time that the problem had to be here, not out there. Because if the problem was out there, I could cure that with people, places, things, circumstances, and conditions. But I didn't know that. And so a couple of weeks later, after that thing with my grandmother, I sit on the back porch of my grandparents' house with my grandfather, watch him drink whiskey out of a fruit jar. And he put it down and went somewhere, and I picked it up and took a drink of it. That's all I did. The next couple of minutes of my life is what makes me an alcoholic. I'm not an alcoholic because I spent the next 20 years of my life creating mayhem in the world. I'm an alcoholic because I have some type of an abnormal reaction to alcohol. And what I damn near died here learning was this, that everybody who drinks alcohol does not get the same reaction from it that I did. I didn't know that, because alcohol was a wonderful thing in my life. Alcohol went down inside of me and kind of stilled the screaming madness. It took me from the black pit of nothingness and stood me into the gray fringes of the business of living. It installed in me some type of arrogance and said, damn you world, it's all right. I'm not good enough to be around the good people, but I'm too good to be around the bad people. It's okay right here. That's what alcohol did for me. Anything that good, you don't give up easy. It just seemed to do it. But you know, what I've come to understand is this, that that's not the thing that drove me into the gates of insanity and death and beyond. What got me was the thing that kicked in right behind that, that our book, Alcoholics Anonymous, talks about. It says it's limited to alcoholics of my type. And it says this, that once I ingest a drink of alcohol into my system, once I put it in there, not before I put it in there, but once I put it in there, then and only then am I drinking to overcome a craving that's beyond all human understanding and beyond all human help. I didn't know that. Because what happened to me when I drank alcohol happened to me every time I drank alcohol. Every time. Not just once in a while. Every time I drank it. I took a drink of alcohol, and 3 days later they pulled me out from underneath a bridge, stood me in front of a judge, and sent me to the Hutchinson State Reform School. 20 years later, I took a drink of alcohol. They pulled me out of a car in Compton and stood me in front of a judge and sent me to 20 years in the penitentiary. Now, that's what happened to me when I drank. I got drunk and went places. I just traveled around. I went from reform school to reform school to junior penitentiaries to penitentiaries to nut houses. Now they call them treatment centers. I like nut house better. It's a little more macho. Come on. If you're going to be bad, for Christ's sakes, be bad. I mean, don't quit drinking because you puke a little. Hang in there. Get everything you got. I'll tell you this, Alcoholics Anonymous work a hell of a lot better when you run out of options. I gave it everything I had. I threw everything into the battle. Everything. And lost the battle and didn't even know I was fighting anything. I never knew what was wrong with me. I never had a slightest idea. I never one time in my life ever came out of one of them institutions and said to myself, you know, been a long time since I've had a series of electroshock treatments. Think I'll have a drink. I just can't hardly stand it. I haven't been able to be comfortable since they took that last straitjacket off of me. Think I'll have a drink. God, it's been a long time since them cops beat the hell out of me and threw me in the back seat of that car in handcuffs. Think I'll have a drink. I just can't hardly wait for that next diagnosis by that psychiatrist in that institution. Think I'll have a drink. Nope. I drank after periods of being sober for the reason alcoholics drink. not to get drunk, not to do any of that thing, just to go. That's why alcoholics drink after being sober for a period of time. Because people like me have to drink. I'm an alcoholic. And it's absolutely and totally necessary for me to drink alcohol if I don't find some type of a spiritual remedy to not have to drink alcohol. That's why Alcoholics Anonymous work. It's one of the most amazing things that I know. I didn't know that. I'm sitting on a furlough from a reform school. I'm 10 or 11 years old drinking a bottle of Marco Petri red wine. It was my drink. Most of you have never heard of Marco Petri red wine. The reason for that is because it was experimental stages of Thunderbird. That's why you never heard of it. I'll tell you how bad it was. It never saw a grape. But it gets you. I'm drinking this stuff. And I hear stuff in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm not saying it's true. I'm not saying it's not true. It's not my experience. I hear people say, alcohol just quit working in my life. Good. It ain't never quit working in mine. In the back of my sick little mind, right to this moment, right to this very moment, over 38 years without any type of mood altering chemicals in my system whatsoever, I still know what makes the big hurt go away. I know. And you put me in the wrong place, in the wrong time, in the wrong set of circumstances, and I'll be drunk. I'm alcoholic. I don't have any more choice about that than I have about flying around this room. And my only chance in life I've come to discover here is not to be in a position where I have to drink. That's why I do this thing. Now, I didn't know that that day sitting on that street corner, because this wine ain't taking me where I want it to take me. I want to go other places, do other things with somebody else. And I'm sitting there and a guy tapped me on the shoulder and said, you ought to try these. And he gave me some pills. Now, I don't remember saying to him, what are those? Will they bother me if I take them? Shit. Thank God they weren't X-Lax, that's all I can tell you. Yeah, we can have a whole new 12-step program called Laxatives Anonymous, I suppose. I could be standing here tonight as the adult child of a laxative taker. I would have been functional, but Mother sat on the toilet all the time when I was small. Well, I hear stuff stupider than that around here than some of these things that masquerade as AA meetings. Work. Thank God it worked. A couple years later, I'm on that same street corner on a furlough from another reform school. And I'm drinking this wine, and I'm eating these pellets, and it ain't quite doing what I want it to do, I suppose, or maybe I'm just there. I don't know. And a guy stuck a needle in my arm. And for the next 14 years of my life, I stuck needles in my arm, and I ran in and out of institutions. That's what I do. See, I live out there in the streets, and I do what people like me who live in the streets do. I destroy every single thing that comes in contact with me. And the reason for that is very simple. I'm a taker. I'm a taker of things, and I'm a user of people, so therefore I'm a loser. I'm selfish, I'm self-centered, and I'm self-serving. I got an ego bigger than this whole room. My entire lifetime was spent before I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, and for a long time after I was here, without a conscious thought or a conscious concern for any other human being who lived upon the face of this earth. I wasn't interested in you at all. Unless you had something I wanted. And then when I got whatever it was that you had that I wanted, I cast you aside like so much trash, I went on about my business. That's the way I live my life. Now, I didn't live my life like that one day, one week, or one month, or till the heat got on, or till I was in trouble. I lived my life like that from my earliest recollection of life. So a long time after I was an Alcoholics Anonymous, and from time to time today, I go into fits of it. I don't understand that. And so what happened to me, basically simply this. When I came to in that cell in solitary confinement in that penitentiary, there wasn't a single solitary soul left upon the face of this earth that would send me a penny postcard. They were all gone. But they should be gone. And I didn't have any right to have any of them back. I still don't have any right to have anything good and decent back in my life. Just because I was lucky enough to stumble in here and get sober, everything that's good and decent in my life is some type of an unwarranted, unearned gift that I got from a God that I discovered sitting in meetings here. It's not because I deserve it, because I'm being good now. Because I'm not good. I'm not good at all. I'm just a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous who's found a way to live in a world where it isn't necessary for me to have to drink alcohol anymore. And a certain series of actions that I have to take to maintain that degree of comfort. Now, I don't know that. I don't know that when I stand in front of that judge and he calls me a blood-sucking parasite of society. Tells me I have no right being around decent people. Tells a woman sitting in the courtroom who's pregnant with my oldest daughter, you care anything about that child at all? You'll never let this bum lay eyes on. I didn't know that. I didn't know what was wrong with me. I didn't have a clue what was wrong with me. And so on the fourth day of November, 1959, I wandered into my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, I didn't come here to get sober because I was as sober when I came to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous as I am right now. It's physically sober. I didn't come here to get sober. Matter of fact, if I'd have known where I was coming, I wouldn't have come. I was an alcoholic anyhow. And if you'd have called me one, I'd have hit you and hurt you badly. But I was sitting in this penitentiary, and I looked up and saw some women walk across the yard. I just followed them. That's all. Like a dog looking for a bone or something, I don't know. I've said for many years that I came to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous to sniff perfume. I've been sniffing around here ever since, so maybe that's true. I don't know. But that's really not true. Not the way I look at it today. Well, it might be some of it. It might have been the attraction that brought me to Alcoholics Anonymous, because God knows what gets us here. I don't. God knows what the attraction is that brings you and I into these rooms one day at a time or one time of our lifetime. That miracle, we walked through the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous when we got in the room. I don't know. Maybe that was mine, but I really believe this. I believe that I'm here in God's grace tonight, and I walked into that meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous because on my deathbed in the old Los Angeles County Jail, almost 40 years ago, I screamed up a prayer in absolute desperation, "Oh God, help me." Now, I thought from that prayer at that moment, as I looked back on it in my new sobriety, I looked back on it and thought, nothing happened because there was no blinding flashes of light. Nobody come running down the hall with a dozen donuts saying, "We got an AA meeting down there." You know, I didn't get up and wander off into the tulip somewhere. I just went to sleep for a little while. I look back on it now, and I don't know how many of you ever kicked a two-year heroin habit, but that's what I was doing. That's the first time I'd been asleep in a long time. Now, when I was new in Alcoholics Anonymous, I hung around with an old man who was the only father that I've really ever known, and he used to talk a great deal about surrender. He'd say, "Surrender," and the room would just rot, for Christ's sake. And so one day I said to him, I got tired of hearing all this surrender business. I said to him, "I want to ask you a question." He said, "Well, what do you want to know, son?" And I said, "Didn't I surrender with the same death on my deathbed in the old Los Angeles County Jail as you did on your kitchen floor in Beverly Hills?" He says, "Why, without a doubt. Why?" I said, "Then how come I got loaded 2 weeks later and you never did?" And he cackled at me. He says, "Son, you have to surrender every day." What a concept. I mean, I just only want to do it once. I don't want to have to give it up every day. What a unique concept. But what a wise old man he was. I remember moving into my first... I hope I never forget my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous and my attitude. Had a good one. Just wandered in and sat in the back row on my throne of contempt. I had my coat collar up and my shades on because I was cool. If I'd have been any cooler when I got here, I'd have froze to death, for God's sake. Remember looking up on the backboard, I saw two big gates, and I thought I'd wandered into some type of an anti-aircraft brigade or something. I didn't know what it was. I said, "What is this?" I said to this guy sitting next to me. He says, "It's Alcoholics Anonymous." Loudly. I kind of sunk down in my seat. I don't know if I see the big gangster hanging out with them winos. Been Gangsters Anonymous or Over Hip Anonymous or Dope Fiends Anonymous. Oh, God, I like dope fiends. Makes the hair on the back of my neck stand up. Makes addicts seem kind of candy ass, don't it? Remember, I'll tell you, if you're going to be bad for Christ's sake. Get it on. I don't know what's wrong. I got so many images wrapped around me when I walk into my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous that I don't even know what I am. I don't know whether I'm a killer, a gangster, a dope fiend, or whatever, weirdo. I don't know what I am. I've played so many games, so many roles, so many times around so many people. I got such many walls built around me that nobody comes within 10 feet of me. Nobody come within 10 feet of me because afraid I'd hurt them. Not because I'm bad, it's because I'm just scared to death all the time. That's all. And frightened people do frightened things. They do violent things when they're frightened. Just so that you don't know that they're frightened. And that's the way I live my life. And I had a reputation that I'd built up for 20 years of being crazy. That's a nice thing. I have a nickname. They used to call me Willow Loco. It's called the White Nut. For all you macho dudes back there. So I don't know what's going on here. So I thought, well, I'll wait for the women to tell their racy story. You got to remember that when I got here, there weren't very many young pretty girls like Christine around here. If they were, they weren't bringing them up that penitentiary where I was at. These old guys got to talk. One of them said she drank for a long time. You could look at her and know she'd been somewhere for a long time. She said, I used to drink. I said, I'll bet you did. Bad stuff, too. I know everything when I got. I'm a walking encyclopedia of useless information. I know so damn much about what ain't true, I don't know what is true. So there I sit. For all intents and purposes, a dead man. I can't live. The medical and psychiatric community said that I was in such criminally insane state of being that I'd never be able to live outside of an institution without some type of medication in my system. I've been declared by the state of California and the federal government as being clinically insane. I have a lot of bad things they told me, but they were just things to brag about on the yard. You know, to be macho, you got to be bad. People leave you alone if you're crazy. So I don't know what's wrong with me. And I tell you what's frightening. Here I was that day. I said, this is the fourth day in November, 1959. I sat in a room in a penitentiary in an old Quonset hut of a building. I sat there this day, and unbeknownst to me, I'm sitting there staring at the answer that I had sold my soul for. But I didn't recognize the answer because I didn't know what the problem was. I didn't have a clue what was wrong with me. If you'd have walked up to me and said, are you an alcoholic? I'd have said, no, I probably would have hit you. But I wasn't alcoholic. I didn't know what one was. It's kind of hard to know what one is if you ain't one and don't know. I'm sorry. There you go. Really, Pop, it's okay. Turn them back on. I promise not to offend them anymore. I didn't have a clue what was wrong with me. And the funny thing about it, the same thing that Christine and I were doing sitting up here at the table tonight is the thing that kept bringing me back to Alcoholics Anonymous time after time. It was the people. It was the people who drove up those old back roads on Sunday morning, 185 miles up those old back roads, at their own expense, bought their own gasoline, bought their own food. They came up there and spent 2 hours talking to a room full of people who didn't want to listen to them. People like me who sit in the back row and made fun of them. I tell you how sick that really is. Here I am, I'm sitting in the penitentiary. I don't know when I'm going home, and I'm making fun of people who are leaving in an hour. But I'm hip. If I'd have had a hat, I'd have put it on backwards. No. But what I've come to understand about that thing, that attraction I had for these people, it's the reason Alcoholics Anonymous works. It's because one alcoholic is attracted to another alcoholic for some unknown reason. Nobody's been able to figure that out. It's what it is that spiritually connects you and I, drunk or sober. Drunk alcoholics or sober alcoholics, it doesn't make any difference. Alcoholics are attracted to alcoholics. It's the most amazing thing that I know of. And I don't know what's going on. I don't understand why these people come up. There's a good reason I don't understand either. See, I'm a taker. Takers do not understand why people do stuff like that. Why would anybody give up their Sundays? drive 185 miles. Why would anybody do that? Takers don't understand that. Takers only understand takers. For the first time in my life, I'm looking at givers. I have never seen them before, because my neighborhood don't run around with them. Where I hang out, we don't hang around with people. Say, here, I'm going to give a little just for the hell of giving it. Don't do that. And I don't know what's going on. I asked these people one time. I said to them, hey, they look at you kind of funny, stand over there a little way. What do you get out of coming up here anyhow? You some type of a sicko? You like to look at the animals in the cages? What's your deal anyhow? And they looked at me and said this. One of them keen alcoholic answers. Well, son, when you can answer that question, you won't have to ask it. I never heard anything that deep on the psychiatrist's couch, for Christ's sake. But you know, that's really true. When you can answer, and when you know why these people on the committee put things on and do all the work that they do here, when you can answer that question, you won't have to ask it either. Because something will happen to you. You know, I want to share with you something that I've learned in Alcoholics Anonymous. This is not an opinion, folks. This is an absolute and total fact based on my experience of sitting in Alcoholics Anonymous meetings maybe 5 or 6 times a week for all these years and doing whatever it is I'm asked to do here. I've learned something here. I've learned my old sponsor, Norm Alpa, used to talk a great deal about crossing over some invisible line from controlled to uncontrolled drinking. Now, I don't have any qualms with that whatsoever. None whatsoever. But as I'm sure as I'm standing here in this room tonight, there is an invisible line in Alcoholics Anonymous. And if you're an alcoholic of my type, and I don't know whether you are or not, that's for you to decide, and you don't cross over that line, you're going to die drunk. I don't care what your sponsor tells you. I don't care what your therapist tells you. I don't care what anybody tells you. If you're an alcoholic of my type, and you hang over on the other side of that line, you're going to die drunk. And I'll tell you what that line is. That line is where you cross over from being a taker to being a giver. And if you don't cross over it, for all intents and purposes, you're a dead man or a dead woman, if that may be the case. And the reason I know that is because my book of experience, Alcoholics Anonymous, says very simply this. Selfishness and self-centeredness seems to be the root of all of our problems. We must be rid of it or it kills us. I know that for a natural fact, because I know alcoholics of my type do not just come in here and put the plug in a jug and their butt in a seat and let the sweet bird of happiness circle around their head forever and ever and ever. I know that. I'll tell you why I know that, because I picked up coffins and called on friends of mine who have died from this deadly disease called alcoholism because they thought all the problem consisted of was not drinking. That may be fine and dandy if you're a drinker. But if you're a drinker, there isn't any need at all for a spiritual awakening either. If you're a drinker. But if you're an alcoholic, like I'm an alcoholic, and like my book of experience describes me as being an alcoholic, which I've come to understand that I am. The only remedy for me, the only chance I have in life is to have some type of a spiritual awakening. My spirit has to be awakened, and it has to soar to mingle with the other spirits here. Because it's amazing to me that the only thing that ever gave me any peace before I got to Alcoholics Anonymous was a spirit. That's what they call alcohol, spirits. It's amazing. So there must be a spiritual answer to a spiritual malady somewhere. And it's amazing that what was read here tonight so very well is that a spiritual awakening is necessary here, because it says we've had one as a result of doing certain things. It doesn't say we've had one just because we got here. Not at all, not to me. Now, I don't know that when I'm sitting. I think my first early days in Alcoholics Anonymous, what you people proved to me beyond a shadow of a doubt was this, that I was not an alcoholic. You proved that to me. And you proved that to me by talking from podiums like this. You would say things like, I used to drink, now I don't drink anymore, and everything is just wonderful. I guess I'm not alcoholic then. I'm as physically sober as you are, Buster, and I'm crazy. God, I wish I was alcoholic. If it was just alcoholic, then all I'd have to do is not drink, and I would not have to live with these nightmares anymore. If I was alcoholic, then all I would have to do is not drink, and I would not have to be faced with those nightmares of those people's lives and those people that I destroyed on my walk through this self-centered, self-existing existence of mine. If I was alcoholic, all I'd have to do then is not drink. So how could I be alcoholic? I'm as physically sober as you are, Buster, and I can't sleep at times because I got the faces of the people I've destroyed. I got the faces of my mother standing at the graveside of my baby brother who I killed. Yeah. How you sleep with that? See, if you're alcoholic the way I'm thinking, then all you got to do is not drink, and that goes away. So how could I be alcoholic, for Christ's sake? I'm physically sober as that guy, maybe sober longer than he is. So I can't be alcoholic. They say, get busy. I equated being busy with being in motion, wandering around. My neighborhood, the faster you move, the smaller target you make. So that could happen in AA, too. So I moved around here, did goofy stuff, tried to pick up ashtrays and stuff, tried to smile. Didn't know what I was doing. I'm trying to do something. I'm back there sitting in the back row, an inventory point. I'm sitting back there doing nothing. I'm sitting there running, Jesus, how could I be alcoholic, for Christ's sake? The only examples of alcoholics, the only people I knew who were alcoholic, were these people who came in there on Sundays. And they would stand at podiums and say they were alcoholic, and they didn't drink anymore, and they were busy, and their lives were just wonderful. Well, I'm busy too. 24 hours a day I'm busy. All night long it's busy up here. Something's going on. I'm busy. I'm playing baseball. I'm running around like a chicken with my head cut off. And I'm not drinking. And every time somebody looks at me, I hit them. I attack people for no reason in mess halls. I do all kinds of crazy stuff, but I'm sober. I don't know what's going on. But one day I got up a long time ago. The reason I know this is because at my Wednesday night meeting the other night, a guy came along and gave me a tape of this little guy. I got up a Sunday morning a long time ago. I didn't know the day I lived my entire lifetime for. How would I know things like that? I'm not allowed to know certain things, thank God. I didn't know that everything I'd ever done in my life had driven me up to the very gates of hell, and I was going to go stand there and somebody was going to open that gate and let me out of hell. I didn't even know I was in hell. I didn't know what was wrong with me. But see, if I'd have been armed with that knowledge that day when I woke up, you would have a different talker here tonight. Because I wouldn't have went to an AA meeting. See, I was not conditioned to go to AA meetings for answers. I'm conditioned to go to the people who don't know about me for answers. I'm conditioned to people who look at my head and try to tell me that it's not my fault, that it's somebody else's fault, that they put me on the pot backwards when I was a kid, and it's the environment that I came from and the violence that I live with and being raised by the state of California and all this other nonsense. But I wasn't armed with that knowledge. So I went and sit where I always sit on Sundays. I sit in this AA meeting. And this little guy that I knew that did 23 flat years of penitentiary stood at a podium of Alcoholics Anonymous that day and told me something I've never forgotten. It makes more sense to me right now than anything that I know. And it'll make more sense to me tomorrow than anything I'll ever learn. He looked down where I was sitting and he said to me, you don't have to live like this no more if you don't want to. He says, you don't have to do it like this no more. Nobody had ever told me that. They'd been telling me all my life not to drink, swallow, smoke, and shoot these things. But they never told me how to live without doing it. And the reason I was attracted to this little guy because he was my manager when I was a star second baseman for the San Quentin Pirates. I put that on a resume one time. Yeah, true. I swear to God it did. The funniest thing I've ever thought, I thought about it one time, not very long ago, and I said that, and my ex-wife fell out of the seat laughing. She thought that was hilarious, too. I had this job, or my sponsor, when I got sober, my sponsor made me go interview for this job. And he said, okay, put down the truth on the application. Well, I didn't want the job, so I put the truth down. And so I put down, he said, sporting activities, and I put prior active, I put down star second baseman for the San Quentin Pirates 2 years running. And this guy reared back in his chair, put his glasses down on his nose. He's reading his application. He says, San Quentin. And I said, yeah. He says, where's that at? And I said, it's up near Stanford. He looked at me, and with all sincerity, he said, God, that must be a good school. And I said, yeah, I learned many, many things there. Yeah. But anyhow, this little guy, after the meeting, I went up to him, and I said to him a very simple thing. Probably the only time I'd ever been honest with anybody in my entire life, but I know. But I said, look at him, and I said, Les, how do you learn how to live? That's all. How do you learn how to live? He looked at me and kind of smiled. He was just a little short guy, a little funny-looking guy. He's my angel. That's what he was. You know what angels are? Angels are messengers of God. And around here, they come in all various shapes and forms. Some of them are ugly. Some of them got noses big and red. Some of them sober 10, 15 years, look like they're still half in a bag, for Christ's sake. This guy was an angel. I know as well as I'm standing. He looked at me and he said, the only thing that could get my attention, said, Johnny, there's a book called Alcoholics Anonymous in the library. You go get it. I'll go home and pray that you find some part of you in it. I guess he prayed real hard, that little fella, because I've been a student of the book Alcoholics Anonymous from that day to this day. I read it every day. The only thing I've ever found in that book is me. I'm not looking for anything else. I'm not looking for a way to sober up the world or cure all of society's ills. I'm looking for a way to live peacefully and comfortably and joyously with me and you and God. And you know, the strange phenomena, as I look back on it and talk about it sometimes, is very simply this. That the closer I adhere to the principles that are written in that book, and the more willing I become to share that knowledge in this fellowship, the more peaceful and the more comfortable and the more joyous I live with me and the loving God that made me. And I tell you what really boggles my mind sometimes, knowing all of that and experiencing this good life that I live when I'm in that state, why I can't live like that forever, it blows my mind. But it basically boils back down to very simply this. My sponsor tells me the best I ever get in Alcoholics Anonymous is just a basic human being. That's all. And I look back on my life today since I've been around you people, and I can see a very simple pattern in my life. Every time that my life gets out of kilter in Alcoholics Anonymous, it starts with a little thought like this. You know, if I just had that, my life would be better. Whatever it is. Oh, it could be a lot of things. It could be anything. Anything. If I just had... I don't know what the hell will make my life better. Every time I've tried to figure that out, I end up worse. I really don't know what makes... Arbuta said this afternoon, I can't run my own life. I don't know what's good for me. I don't know what's not good for me. I only know that if I come here and do what I'm asked to do in Alcoholics Anonymous, my life seems to be a joyous song to God. That's all I know. It's only when I get to thinking that there's other things that I should be doing, other avenues, other heights to reach, if you will, that I seem to get all screwed up. You know what the greatest event that ever happened to me in my life is? It's not coming here. I'm sorry. Not getting sober. Not coming to Alcoholics Anonymous. I was sober when I got here. The greatest single event in my life is not my children or my grandchildren or the good life that I live today. Not at all. The greatest single event that ever happened to me in my life, bar none, happened to me sitting in a room with the man a long time ago, doing what our program of recovery says is the fifth step. I heard myself say to that man that I was an alcoholic. And from way down deep inside of me, there came a freedom that I carry with me to this very instant. Right now. You see, as I stand here before you tonight, it's what I've known for a long time, and I've known it all day long. I know exactly what's wrong with me. Me. I'm an alcoholic, and I suffer from a disease called alcoholism. That's all. I'm not an alcoholic and anything. When I was an alcoholic and something or other, I couldn't have your program. And the reason it separated me from you, I wasn't quite like you, you know. I'm a little better than you. I'm a little slicker than you. I'm a little hipper than you. I'm a little keener than you, but I'm not like you. When I became just like you, alcoholic, it became necessary for me to practice the only program of recovery for alcoholics of my type. In 7,000 years of recorded history, this is the only thing that's ever worked for people like me. So I do this. Not because I'm good, or not because I'm wonderful, or not because I have an awareness or a nearness to God that some people never get. It's just because I can't drink and live, and of myself I can't keep from drinking. And if I do these simple little things, it guarantees me that I don't have to drink alcohol. That's all. That's what it said. It says if I do these things, I won't have to drink anymore. That's all I want. I came out of that penitentiary on the 4th day of June, 1961, to a world I didn't know anything about. The only thing I was armed with was the 19 months I'd spent in Alcoholics Anonymous in that institution, and somehow or other I had completed to the best of my ability the first 9 steps of this program of recovery in there. And so I came out, and the dream in my head was this, and the only one I ever had, the one I have today, basically, that maybe someday you would let me come and sit with you in a meeting. I never dreamed by my wildest imagination that you would ever ask me to do anything here, because I didn't think that you would let people like me even sit in your rooms with you. Oh, I knew you'd come to the penitentiary, but I didn't think you'd let a scumbag like me come and sit in your meeting, because I never knew anybody like me who ever got sober. So I said to myself, if they do that, if they gave me that privilege, I'll do anything they ask me to do. So I walked out of that penitentiary one day on the 4th day of June, 1961. I went home to see my mother. My mother fell off the steps blind drunk. I picked her up and put her on a couch and said, Mom, I'm going to an AA meeting. He said, fine, I think you should. I'd like to be able to stand here tonight and tell you my mother got sober. My mother never did get sober. My mother from time to time became undrunk. And from time to time in her state of undrunkenness, she came to these meetings. But I don't call that sobriety. I don't call that being sober at all. I call that being in a state of undrunkenness. It's the way I was when I got here. And so unnecessary is my mother in a state of undrunkenness without realizing the spiritual experience, the spiritual awakening that's necessary for alcoholics of my type. My mother had to leave Alcoholics Anonymous periodically for the next 30 years. A guy asked me one time, how much sobriety did your mother have? And I said, I don't think my mother ever, I don't know. I don't know how long my mother was undrunk. I don't think my mother was ever undrunk for over 90 days. And I used to, like Arbutus, I have resigned myself somewhere during that 15 or 20 years, resigned myself to the fact that my mother was going to die drunk. I resigned myself to that fact. I knew just as well as I was standing there. But I also knew that if anything short of that would be a blessing. And a little over 4 years ago, my mother got drunk and fell down and went into the hospital and never came out. We went through some series of things because she had some bad medical problems, and I sat there with her. And one day about 4 years ago, I sat and held my mother's hand and watched my mother go off to wherever people who die go to. I was the last thing in this world my mother ever saw. The last thing. And if you'd have walked up to my mother 5 minutes before she died and said to my mother, aren't you proud of your son? Aren't you proud of Johnny? Man, he came out of them gangs down there. He came out of them gangs. He came out of them institutions and penitentiaries. He got into Alcoholics Anonymous, found out he was an alcoholic, and he straightened up and he lives a good life. He votes. He does everything that he's supposed to do out there. He pays his taxes. He supports his family. Aren't you proud of your son? You know what my mother would have told you? She would have said to you, my son's not alcoholic, for Christ's sakes. His life got a lot better when he quit running around with the Mexicans. Now, if you was to mention that to some of that psychobabble that you hear in some of these things at Masqueraders AA meetings, they would tell you this, well, I guess your mama was in a state of denial. A denial is a river in Egypt. My mother lived in a delusion. Alcoholics live in delusions. Denial are just lies. You're lying if you say you're in denial. You're just a flat liar. A delusion is an entirely different state of being that only alcoholics live in. The delusion that we're like other people or presently maybe got to be smashed. That's a delusion. That's not a lie. That's the way we believe. Alcoholic life is the only normal one. We can't tell the truth from the false here. It's written in that big blue book called Alcoholics Anonymous. It must be in Michigan. It's in California. That stuff is in that book. I didn't understand that. I don't know what's going on with my mother, but I sat there and watched that dance of death for 30 years, watching the powerlessness of myself with my mother. I love my mother. My mother, our beauty said it today, I love an alcoholic. I love my mother. Powerless to do anything about it. Sitting smack dab in this beautiful program of recovery called Alcoholics Anonymous, living this good, sober life that I live with all the benefits and joys of it, I watched the woman that I love more than anything, my mother, drink herself to death, absolutely and totally powerless to do anything about it. And you know what I discovered from that? That I don't have the power to get anybody sober. I don't have the power to get them drunk either. I don't even have any power to keep me sober. Where would I get any power? My book, Alcoholics Anonymous, says that I am absolutely and totally powerless. That what I have here is a daily reprieve contingent upon my maintenance of certain spiritual condition. That's all. So this is my day. I don't have any yesterdays. I don't have any tomorrows. I'm not sober today because I've been sober 30-some years. I'm not sober today because I went to so many institutions and carried the message to so many people and sponsored so many people or go to so many meetings. I'm sober today because I am where I say I was going to be, doing what I say I'm going to do. That's all. To me, that's called commitment. To me, that's the most spiritual act that a person like me can ever do, regardless. I am where I say I'm going to be, doing what I say I'm going to do when I say I'm going to do it. That's spiritual to me. I went to a meeting one night a long time ago, and a guy walked up to me and said, I'm going to be your sponsor. I said, really? He says, yeah. And he says, I'm going to help you get it done, John. I said, well, what do you want to do then? He says, why do you ask me? Jeez. I said, you just said you're going to be my sponsor. He said, John, if I can't run my life, what makes you think I can run yours? I said, then what do you want me to do? He says, you do what I do. What is it you do? I said to him. He said, well, if you do what I do, then you'll know what I do. He said, what? Monkey see, monkey do around here, dude, I'll tell you that. He said, I don't know what to do, but I know I don't know what to do, so I got to find out what he does. Oh, not here in AA. Hell, we're all better here than we are. Wonderful. How are you? Just fine today. Thank you. Walking this spiritual path hand in hand with God and the rest of his children. Then we walk out the door and run people over, get into the bathroom. Get out of the bathroom! I'd find out what he did out there in the world, where the world is. You know, where people, waitresses, stuff, how you treat them. How you treat retail clerks, how you treat the people you work with, how you treat your family, how you treat all these people. I don't know. I don't have any social skills. I never had a job in my life before I got out of the penitentiary. I'm a thief. They don't really make you file income taxes. You steal stuff. Rob people. So I got to learn how to do all this kind of stuff. I got to know how to be... I have to learn how to act in an AA meeting. I don't know how to act in an AA meeting. I have to learn in the penitentiary. I learned just one of the guys in the penitentiary. We sit there. If you said the wrong thing in there, somebody hit you in the head anyhow. So it didn't make any difference. See, I had to learn it. My sponsor taught me a very simple little thing that seems to be missing in a lot of places that I go. It's called common courtesy. Worried about the person. He said, sit down, shut up, and listen. I said, why? He said, well, just because I said so, that's why. He didn't explain nothing to me. I used to call him in the middle of the night just to see if he'd answer the phone. Man, I didn't want anything. I just wanted to see if he'd answer the phone. You know. Norm, he said, what do you want, jackass? Some of us have to work tomorrow. I'd say, Norm, my program ain't working, Norm. He'd say, try ours. He said things like, "Jackass, your program never did work." Boy, that's true. My program got me at the ripe old age of 27 years old, crawling around in a cell in solitary confinement at a maximum security penitentiary, drifting in and out of total insanity. That's what my program got me. So my program don't work. If my program worked, I'd be in Long Beach tonight. If my program worked. But you see, what I've learned here is that our program works. It's not mine. What's happened to me in this magnificent thing called Alcoholics Anonymous is that the majority of my life has been spent, since I've been sober, getting rid of I and putting we in there. This is a we thing. This is not an I thing. That's why I can't do it alone. That's why I gotta have you. That's why I gotta have friends like my friend Tom. That's why I gotta have people like Arbutus and these people around here in Milton. I gotta have these people. I gotta have Clancy's. I gotta have Norm Alpies and Chuck Chamberlain's and all these people. Because I can't do it. I don't know how to do it. I don't know how to do it today, for Christ's sakes. I gotta have a sponsor who's sober longer than me doing it too. Because I don't know. I don't want to do it sometime. But I can't tell him because he's doing it. It's a goofy thing. It's a crazy thing. It ain't supposed to be like that. It's supposed to be easy. It is easy. It's the easiest thing I've ever done. Staying sober in Alcoholics Anonymous is the easiest thing I've ever done. It's the easiest life I've ever lived. It's the only good life I've ever known. This is easy. I tell you what's hard. Being out there in them streets with a 2-year heroin habit and no money on a Sunday when the connection went fishing. You're getting ready to have a bad day out there, I'll tell you that. Coming to with your head all battered and bruised from them policemen's billy club, standing in front of a judge wondering what you did this time. That's tough. That's a tough way to live. Sitting across the desk from a psychiatrist in a straitjacket after a series of electroshock treatments, wondering where you've been for the last 3 or 4 days, and trying to attack him. That's a tough way to live. You ever tried to attack a psychiatrist in a straitjacket? Kind of amusing to him. I had to go to meetings with Norm because I didn't have a car. And the reason I didn't have a car because he wouldn't let me have one. The reason I couldn't have a car because I didn't have a driver's license. Because my driver's license had been suspended for the rest of my natural life. That's a long time. So Norm told me that citizens like him had a right to be protected from jerks like me, so I shouldn't drive a car. So I'd have to call him up and say, Norm, I need to go. Will you come by and pick me up, take me to a meeting with you tonight, Norm? Okay, jackass. Stand on the street corner. I'll pick you up. Be ready. God. Remember a hot July night, one night I was standing there, it was hot July, we're going to a little club over in Santa Ana, it's hot over there. So I put on my new tank top and my new shorts, stuck my feet in my thongs, slicked back my hair, put my shades on, and stood on the street corner waiting for old Norm. Old Norm drove up, took one look at me, and drove off. You may think that's funny. I'll tell you, if I could have caught his car that night, I'd have killed old Norm. I waited till about 1 o'clock till I thought he was in bed, and I called him. Norm, he said, "What do you want, jackass?" He always answered. I said, "Norm, you left me standing on the street corner." He says, "I know that." I said, "Why'd you do that, Norm?" He says, "You want to know?" And I said, "Yes." He says, "I'm going to ask you a question." He said, "Would you go to church dressed like that, Johnny?" I said, "No, I wouldn't." He said, "You ain't going to my church dressed like that either." I said, "How come you yell at me at meetings, tell me to shut up and sit still?" He said, "Well, if you want to go to meetings, you don't want to listen, that's your business. You ever stop to think that maybe somebody else does?" I said, "No." He said, "I didn't think so. Selfish, self-centered people like you don't think about anybody but yourself." He said, "If I was you, but I'm not you, I would pay attention to everything I hear in an AA meeting from the time they hit the gavel until they say amen." So being curious, I said, "Why is that, Norm?" He said, because one of these days you're going to need everything you ever hear in an AA meeting, and you don't even know what it is. Hmm. How truthful that is. I can't tell you the number of times that I've been out there full of self, wandering around in the world. You know, and I couldn't turn it over or pray, because you can't do that when you're full of self. And something has happened in an AA meeting. Maybe some line somebody said, some joke somebody told will come through, and it'll distract me for a moment. God, how grateful I was at that particular moment in the meetings I go to. Some guy didn't have to get up because nobody had seen him for 15 minutes and walk off in front of me, because you'd probably have another speaker here today. It's an amazing thing to me what my sponsor, how wise my sponsor was. God, I look back on it, he'd been dead for 15, 16 years now. But God, how wise he was. He knew more. It's like my kids. My kids tell me, the older they get, the smarter I am. Really? Yeah, when they were teenagers, I didn't know nothing. Now they're parents. How smart I am. You're wise, Daddy. Yeah, how about taking us to dinner? Oh, okay. Remember one night I was in a meeting with old Norm. I really liked this one. Because he was so good to me, at the moment I thought he would just browbeat me. I was at a meeting with him one night, and I wandered back to the literature table at the coffee break. And the guy tapped me on the shoulder, and I turned around face to face with this little guy staring at me like... And I said, yeah? He said, Johnny, I heard you talk the other night. Do you know you're a miracle? Oh, really? What was it that brought this about? I said to him. He said, well, you know, man, you'd blah, 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 blah. He talked and talked, and I kept, you know, about ready to float out the door somewhere out there. By the time he got through talking, I'm sitting in my seat looking out the window for my spaceship, you know, just trying to check what star I came from up there. God, I know I'm gone. Old Norm's watching me, too. You got to be careful hanging around your sponsor. On that way, on the way home that night, because I still didn't have a car, even though I am a miracle. Old Norm looked at me and he said, Johnny, what's the matter with you? You've been smoking that stuff? I said, Norm, you ain't going to understand this, but I'm a miracle. I guess old Norm didn't understand that. But he slammed on the brakes, almost went into the divider and screamed at me. You're what? I'm a miracle, Norm. He said, where do you get this nonsense, for Christ's sake? I said, the guy just told me that in a meeting. You can't deny that. He said, jackass, you're not a miracle. Alcoholics Anonymous is a miracle, and you're just a small part of it. Now, I don't know what that does for all the miracles in the room. But I can tell you what it's done for me. It's kept me small enough to stay here. Can you possibly imagine what an egotist like me would do if I believed I was a miracle? I mean, you can let your imagination soar, folks. We'd probably be getting some buses together tonight so I could take you all to Waco to do it right this time. See, I know I have that kind of an ego. I know that. That's why I got to have a sponsor that's stronger than my head. I got to have one of them browbeaters on me all the time. I got to have people pulling me around, telling me to shut up and sit still, because I have that type of an ego. I know that. I used to run around with an old man who was the only father I've ever known, a guy by the name of Chuck. He's dead now for a long time. And for all intents and purposes, he was my papa. I called him papa, and he called me son. And I loved him probably more than I've ever loved anything in my life before, since, bar none. And I used to ride around with him in cars, and he'd tell me things. I'd always try to say things to him to try to let him know that I was getting it, whatever it was I was trying to get. And I always got it wrong somehow or other. I'd try to quote him, and I'd always quote it wrong somehow or other. And he'd say, that's not the way I said it, son. I'd say, oh. So I quit saying anything. I just get over in the corner and watch him. And one night I snapped a pamphlet off them literature table. Come to think of it, I get a lot of trouble when I hang around them literature table. I'm going to quit hanging around them literature table. Anyhow, I snatched this pamphlet, stuck it in my pocket because I had it. It's a pamphlet. It's a proof pamphlet. Somebody approved it. So we're riding down. I said, can I read this to you, Papa? And he said, what do you want to read me, son? I said, this pamphlet. And he said, well, sure, go ahead. I said, why we were chosen. He said, hold it. What makes you think we're chosen? I said, it says right here we're chosen. He said, no, we're not. He said, Johnny, we're all God's kids. All of us are. If I am, you are, and if you are, I am. If I'm not, you're not, and if you're not, I'm not. He says he makes the rain to fall on the just as well as the unjust, Johnny. I looked at him kind of stupid, and I said, then I want to ask you a question. How come I'm sober? Just tell me, how come am I sober? I know people who are far better people than I'll ever be who cannot get sober and stay sober. My mother's like that. He said, that's very simple. He says, you've come to understand you're one of God's kids and you act like it. I said, well, what do God's kids act like? I don't know. He said, well, God's kids do simple little things. He said, they just wander around in the world and they try to help God's kids get things done that need to be done, and they do it for free and they do it for fun. What an odd concept that man lived by. And he lived that way. And he taught me to live like that most of my life. You know, a lot of great things have happened to me in my life. I don't know what somehow or other this thing has happened. The last year that this old man lived, I sat with him every week as I and took care of him a whole day. I rocked him in my lap and sang him love songs because I loved him so much. And I tried to put back in a small measure what little bit he'd put into my life or what great things he'd put back into my life. It was just a magnificent thing, and he died on my birthday. It was the most heartbreaking thing that I've ever had. My life has never really ever been the same since. Only the memory of him keeps me going from time to time, and the things that he taught me from going from time to time, because I have never loved anything like I loved that old man. Nothing whatsoever. I've never really ever loved anything or anybody the way I loved old Norm either, my sponsor. Oh, I love my children. Great things have happened to me in Alcoholics Anonymous. Great things have happened to me. My youngest daughter, a little over 2 years sober in Alcoholics Anonymous today. I watched her. I threw her out of my house when she was a senior in high school and told her she wanted to kill herself. That was her business. But I was going to sit around and watch her. I know what it's like to love an alcoholic. I know what it's like to look at the powerlessness of this madness kill these people. I know what it's like. That's why I love to hear Arbutus talk. I'll go listen to her talk anywhere she talks. I'm not too keen about all the rest of them, but I love her. That's not nothing to do with you people. I love that old woman because she always talks about the love of an alcoholic. I know what it's like to love an alcoholic. I love my youngest daughter. She's 2 years sober. I spent the last year with her and my little 7-year-old grandson just loving on them every Tuesday. Last Friday, I went and took my little 7-year-old grandson to grandparents' day at school. He looked at me and took me up to his teacher and said, this is my grandpa. She said, what's his name? He had to look at my tag. It's almost like an AA meeting, you know. Conference.
Oh, hi, Dale.
And he showed me everything in that room he had. Everything. He showed me a room. He'd walk around there like a little butterball. He runs into walls and comes over to my house and knocks the lamps down. Said it was broke anyhow, Grandpa. Sure it was. See, I love that little kid. What I learned in Alcoholics Anonymous, because I learned to love that old man and my sponsor, I'm able to love my grandchildren because of it, and everybody in between. Because if I had never learned to love my sponsor and my papa, I would have never able to learn to love anything. People like me really don't love anything anyhow. People like me who use everything, never understand the ingredient of love. I never brought those kind of feelings with me into Alcoholics Anonymous. They'd been missing all my life. You and Stalin. They came as a result of getting rid of all this stuff and becoming of service to Alcoholics Anonymous. That's all. There's no great magic thing. There's nobody got anything here in Alcoholics Anonymous that anybody else can't have. Nobody. You know, I'm a very busy person in Alcoholics Anonymous. I go a lot. Christine was asking me about it. It's nice. She said, how much you go? I told her, and she just... And she said, well, don't you say no? And I said, who do you say no to? Who do I say no to? I mean, my papa taught me how to answer telephone. He said, you don't even know how to answer a phone, son. I said, well, yes, you pick it up and say hello. He said, no, you just say if the date's open, it's yours. Oh, do you realize how simple that makes your life? That takes care of Thanksgiving, the 4th of July, Christmas, birthday, anniversary. It takes care of everything. If the date's open, it's yours. And because I've been such a busy person, Alcoholics Anonymous, from time to time, I've been in difficulties in life, and people say it's because you're so busy in Alcoholics Anonymous. I heard my dear friend Tom talk down in, I think it was Mississippi last summer, and he made the statement that just knocked me out of my chair, and it was this: I have never lost anything of value to me because of my involvement in Alcoholics Anonymous. Not at all. It's not of mine. You see, if I turn my will and my life over to the care of God as I understand Him and try to do what I'm asked to do around here, my life is really none of my business. What comes into my life and stays in my life is God's business. What comes into my life and flows through my life and leaves my life is God's business. It's not my business. My life is not my business. My only business seems to be today is to live this way. And if I do that to the best of my ability, it becomes God's business to take care of me. I don't have any control about that whatsoever. I either believe that there's a God or I don't. Very simple. It's easy to say I believe there's a God. But there's also a different thing in trying to have to trust God. I trust Him. And the reason I trust Him is because no matter what's going on in my life, I'm over there sitting in the AA meeting trying to look like I got some degree of dignity. Always sticking my hand out to the newcomers whether I feel like it or not. My home group, the Monday Night Big Book Group in Bellflower, I'm the assistant chairman there. That means I get to help the chairman put the chairs away at the end of the meeting. And he's always ragging on me because I don't do such a good job of it. And I sponsor him. It's his little 15 minutes in the sun. Okay, Ray. Remember, the chairs will be put away here in a few moments. I make coffee at my Wednesday night meeting for 1,100 people who never say to me, what good coffee you're making. They just drink it. But I love it. I got a little crew of guys. We have a meeting before the meeting and after the meeting. See, what I'm trying to tell you is that I have a job in every AA meeting that I go to, because my seat is not mine just because I want to sit in. I have to be willing to take a part of my own sobriety by doing something in an AA meeting to try to give back in some small measure what's been given me here. If I work every waking moment of my life from now to eternity trying to give back what I've been given in Alcoholics Anonymous, I'd never be able to do it for just what I felt today. When some people called me up and said, no, I'd like to come up and sit down and talk with you for a while. Jesus. 39 years ago, nobody would come and see me nowhere, and they damn sure didn't want to talk to me. And as a result of Alcoholics Anonymous, I go places and see people that I love, and I'm around people that I love, and I've got such a good life that sometimes it's absolutely and totally scary. My last year hasn't been such a big bit of cake, because a little over a year ago, I entered a situation that almost broke my heart. And so I can tell you this, too. I can tell you that you can live sober in Alcoholics Anonymous with a broken heart. I can tell you that you can do the things that you're supposed to do in Alcoholics Anonymous for over a year, maybe 13 months, with an absolute and total broken heart. But you can do them. You can go to your meetings, you can make coffee, you can put the chairs away, and you can sponsor people, and you can be sponsored. You go to book study meeting, and you can go to conferences, and you can go do things. In Alcoholics Anonymous, you can do all these things with a broken heart. Because I've done it. I can tell you that you can go to meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous and do these things overladen with guilt for some dastardly deed that you've created. Some affair that you got involved in you shouldn't be involved in. You can go to meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, you can put the chairs away, and you can make coffee, and you can sponsor people, and you can be sponsored, and you can do what you're asked to do here, no matter how you're feeling, because nobody gives a damn how you feel around here. The only thing that anybody's ever interested in around here is what you do, because that's the thing that's going to make you what you are. This is not a program where you sit around and think your way into right living. This is a program where you have to get out and live your way into right thinking. Now, when I die, and I'm going to die one of these days, I'm sure. I don't know, there's people making book on it out there where I live. The old son of a bitch ain't never gone away. And I get to wherever I'm going, wherever that is. If there ain't flowers and birds singing and people like Chuck Chamberlain and Norm Alpie and all those people, I don't think I want to go there. I really don't. Because you see, before those type of people came into my life and my current sponsor, Clancy, who had been my sponsor for the last 15 years since Norm died, if those people aren't there, and there ain't people like my old friend Tom, I'm not trying to get you to go ahead of me, Tom, but if there's only one bus, one seat on the bus, you're welcome to it, I'll tell you that. I don't want to go. I really don't. I tell you why. Before these people came into my life, I lived in absolute and total hell. I lived in hell. I know it's hell, because hell could not possibly be any hotter than where I was. Now, since these people come walking into my life in November of 1959, I have been rocketed into a fourth dimension, and I know what it's like to live in heaven. Because living in heaven is being here with you. To see you smile and to hear you laugh and to share your joy and your happiness and to sit and see the people that I've known for 30-some-odd years of my life and like I've only seen them yesterday. And to be able to love and to be loved and to be able to give and to be able to receive. It's the most amazing thing that I know, because I didn't come here with that 38 years ago. You see, everything I have in my life, I owe to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't owe to anything else. Everything I may ever hope to have in my life, I will owe to this program called Alcoholics Anonymous. And dear friends, please believe this. It's a long, long walk from a cell in solitary confinement at a maximum security penitentiary to where I stand right now. But for the grace of God, AA and good folks like you, I could have missed it all. God bless you.